This is Northumberland at 5.
Hi, and welcome to Northumberland at 5. I'm your host, Dan Jones. I have a great show for you today. The United Way Northumberland and several volunteers stuffed 850 backpacks Tuesday to help assist children in need start the new school year with excitement and the tools required for a strong school year. We will then head to Port Hope and hear from the local historical society about their activities, but also a cool story about the history of the Port Hope Town Hall. And of course, local music, all this hour, and community announcements coming your way, so stay tuned.
1, 2, 3, 4!
snake bite fever.
Creekwater Junkies with Snakebite Fever as part of a four-song set to kick off your 5 o'clock hour. Volunteers were preparing 850 backpacks Tuesday for children in need across the county as part of the Northumberland United Way's Backpack for Kids program. Now entering its 21st year of ensuring students from JK to grade 12 start the school year with the tools they need, including essentials like math supplies, pencils, and coloring materials, as well as nutritional snacks. United Way Executive Director Alicia Van Dyne says the community is really supportive of the program.
Definitely a year-round project for us. As I mentioned in the opening remarks today, we basically drop off the last backpack and we start planning for the next year, because what we've seen is that the need is increasing year over year. And our ability, of course, to meet that need is really directly related to the donations. And so really proud to tell you, last year we had 4 product drives. This year we had 17. I mean, absolutely amazing response from the community. And I think it's because it's such a tangible way to help someone here in Northumberland County. We're distributing backpacks across the county and all of our municipalities. And also proud to say we're putting a few at Alderville as well.
Now, 850, that's a very ambitious number. How did you come up with that number? Was that from last year, or do you anticipate that that was the need going into this year?
We sort of anticipated, based on some historical, we're seeing, you know, at least a 10 or 15% increase each year in the total demand. And so we set 850 as the goal this year, and I suspect it will increase next year based on that history.
Okay, so let's talk about what is in the backpacks. I know different school grades get different materials and whatnot, so talk to us about the primary and not secondary students.
Yeah, so of course everything is age appropriate, and we call them the littles, the SK, JK grade ones. We really focus on making sure that they have a lunch pail, extra crayons, extra supports in terms of their creative needs. In our grades 2 to 5, we're really starting to think about math kits and small math kits, because we know that kids need to be proficient in math and reading by the time they get to grades 3 and 5. And so we are putting in supports to make sure that we can help them on their educational journey. For our high school backpacks, we want to make sure that there's a scientific calculator, of course, an upgraded math kit that has more pieces to deal with the more complex math that they're doing. But one of the needs that we heard in community was about hygiene, in particular for our high school students, because if a family is struggling, you know, they're cutting corners, we wanted to make sure that kids felt really good about themselves. And mental health, of course, with our young people is such an important thing today. We wanted to do something tangible to help them go to school feeling confident with the tools that they need to fit in with their peer groups.
Yeah, the cost of some of those hygiene products can get very expensive, so I can understand the decision of whether to purchase that over some vegetables or fruit or some meat. I can understand that. What has been the response that you've seen when the kids get their backpacks and the families see that they actually have something great to start the year?
You know, I think April captured it today in our opening. It feels like Christmas for the children. They are so excited to be able to have a new backpack, new notebooks, new things. You know, when we see them and they're looking, they're already peeking in to see what's in there. And of course, you know, we've got some granola bars that we're putting in there as well. And so the kids feel really good. They have a big smile on their face, and you just see their shoulders kind of raise a little bit. They're just so excited to wear that backpack the next day. So we're really excited about just being able to do something really tangible to help young people in our area.
Now, this couldn't have been done without the volunteers in the room at the Lions Center, basically putting the backpacks together. What's that say about the turnout you've seen today?
You know, we have probably doubled the amount of volunteers this year that we did last year. We had, of course, the new Chief Leather, come in and donate some items and be here. We've got representation here from, of course, Northumberland County and SABIC and our corporate friends. We can't say enough to say thank you to Sarah and Brett Turk, who did the Stuff the Ram event over in Port Hope. It really, truly takes a community to raise a child, but it also takes a community to do backpacks for kids, and we're really proud to be part of it.
17 community donation drives were held this year to gather enough supplies.
Pass me by. I may be nothing like the man.
author there, Shannon Linton, before that for some great local talent. The Port Hope Historical Society has been operating for over 60 years, documenting and preserving the rich history of the region. It has documents and objects dating back centuries. Catherine Tozer presented to Port Hope Council this week, saying the municipality's town hall once served as a community dance hall, schoolroom, and had an apartment.
We're here because we recognize that our quiet work over the years may not be known by council or to council or staff. And during this transition of our colleague organization, the Port Hope Archives, this is an important time for Port Hope, for information about Port Hope's vital role in preserving local heritage. We'll also say up front that although we're going to be talking about the importance in the history of the Historical Society, we also will be touching on the fact that we'd like to have a meaningful role in the decisions pertaining to two things before council coming up soon. 17 Mill Street, we'd like it to remain the archival location, and documents pertaining to the history of the former town and township remaining in Port Hope, but more about that later. The Port Hope Historical Society has all of the charitable requirements for a modern charity in the province of Ontario. We meet all those standards. We have an extensive collection of photos, letters, maps, articles, certificates, and family histories back to the first settlers donated by local families who entrusted us and believe their family heirlooms will be cared for and remain local and remain accessible to future generations. The Port Hope Historical Society has been quietly active in our community for decades. How long? Well, here's a question. Where were you in 1964? That was the year that the Beatles appeared in the Ed Sullivan Show. Mary Poppins debuted in movie theaters for the first time. On black and white TVs, two new shows appeared for the first time, Bewitched and Gilligan's Island. If you don't recognize either of those, ask your mother or your grandmother. Canadian Parliament voted to switch flags from the British Union Jack to an innovative new national symbol, the maple leaf. All of that in 1964. Some of us here were not born yet. For some of you, your parents hadn't even met yet. But 1964 was the year that Port Hope citizens established the Port Hope Historical Society and has been meeting regularly since then. It's one of the oldest continually meeting town or township historical societies in Ontario. The original name was the East Durham Historical Society because it reaches back to the time it was established during the time when Port Hope and Hope Township were part of Durham, not Northumberland County. When we were chartered in 1964, the very first president was Michael Adika. You might be familiar with that name. So we want to make the point there that we're very well established in the municipality and have been for 60 years. Now, what's the difference between the Port Hope Historical Society and the Port Hope Archives? Well, a little bit of background on the archives. In 1994, A.K. Sculthorpe convinced the province to transfer ownership of the former Port Hope land office to the municipality, 17 Mill Street. Mrs. Sculthorpe and Lord Rusborough were instrumental in establishing the Port Hope Archives now that they had secured a perfect location. At that time, the Archives Board invited the Historical Society to merge the Historical Society's collections with the new Archives collections. But the Society decided to continue to be independent. That was 30 years ago. Now, over the years, local families donated their documents to either the Port Hope Historical Society or the Port Hope Archives, but the two organizations were not competitive. Both collections of archival or old documents grew over the past 30 years, especially the archives. Now, we've got a list of some of the things that we're involved in annually or through the year, but I'm going to skip and talk about the speakers. Periodically, the Society has had speakers from time to time. Society's most recent speaker was Susan Casson, daughter of A.K. and Bob Sculthorpe. Ms. Casson spoke about Port Britain on the Lakeshore Road from the 1790s to about the 1960s with details of local families, farms, houses, and the changing topography. You can only get that from local people. Recognizing that delegation has only the limited 10 minutes, I'll tell you a short story that illustrates the kind of local information gathered and preserved by the Historical Society over the past 60 years. One of the speakers at an Historical Society event in 1984 was Doris Reed. Mrs. Reed was talking about the town hall. Her parents lived in an apartment on the main floor at the north end for 30 years, from 1908 to 1940, through the First World War, the Depression, to the beginning of the Second World War. The reason they lived here was her father, Arthur Cheshire, was the tax collector, but he's also the clock engineer, the police constable, the weigh scale superintendent, the jail keeper, the clerk of the farmer's market, caretaker of the building, and he managed the land all around the town hall. He wasn't kitchen, dining room, 3 bedrooms, and an office. Doris Cheshire Reed just had to walk upstairs to go to school. The schoolroom was on the second floor. Dances were held in this room, which was originally built to be a ballroom. It wasn't built for you. It wasn't built for council. It was built as a ballroom for community dances, and there was one every week. The Port Hope Citizens Band practiced weekly in what is now a committee room. Mrs. Reed told the Historical Society audience in 1984 that she was born in her parents' apartment in the town hall. This is what she said. One cold winter's night, the 18th of March, 1918, twin babies were born here in this building downstairs because there was no room at the hospital on Ward Street because it was the end of, it was during the war and the men had returned from the front and they were overflowing the hospital on Ward Street. Doris and Douglas were the two twins and there were 5 children. As children, their favorite game inside after business hours was sliding down the wooden banister here in this building from the top floor to the basement as fast as they could go. So this story is so much more powerful because we're in Port Hope as we listen to it. A person who lived here told it to us firsthand. Our imaginations are fired up. We smile. We feel warm. We feel proud to live here. For just a few minutes, we travel back in time. If we're visiting here when we hear this story, we feel forever connected to this place on Lake Ontario.
Community announcements are next.
Here's what's happening in Northumberland.
Hi, this is Andrea with What's Happening. Friends of the Wesleyville Village present their live pop-up music with Dave Chown, and that's Classic Country on Tuesday, August 11th at 6:30. Concert Band of Coburg Summer Series in the Band Shell every Tuesday at 7:30 in Coburg's Victoria Park. Concerts in Brighton's Memorial Park Wednesday, August 12th at 6:30 with the Plowboys featuring Freddie Vett. Movies in Port Hope's Memorial Park Wednesday, August 12th at 8 p.m. showing Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Road to Cultivate presents collaborations with Eerie Vibes, The Human Rights, and that's at Port Hope Memorial Park Band Shell Thursday, August 13th. It starts at 6 and the Maker's Market is at 3. Colborne's Music in the Square is Thursday, August the 13th. Northumberland Ribfest and Music Festival is hosted by the Coburg Rotary Club and it starts Friday, August the 14th and it runs until Sunday the 16th. And it features mouth-watering ribs and amazing live music in a festival atmosphere. And it's in Coburg's Victoria Park. Farley Mowat's and No Bird Sang opens Friday, August the 14th and runs through till September 6th. And that's upstairs at the Capitol Theater in Port Hope. Eerie Vibes Festival is a free, family-friendly Caribbean celebration of culture and music. And it's Saturday, August the 15th, noon to 9 in Port Hope's Memorial Park. The Warkworth Long Lunch is Sunday, August the 16th, and that's from 11 a.m. to 2:30, and it's held all the way along the Main Street. The annual Show and Shine for Spencer Devine Car Show is Sunday, August the 16th, from 10 to 4 at the Port Hope Fairgrounds.
If you have an upcoming event you'd like us to share, email info@northumberland897.ca.
Well, that's going to do it for me today. Coming up after the 6 o'clock news, the Doug and Ken Show. Have yourselves a great evening, and remember, take care of yourselves and each other.